Hello, I'm Amy Harry, and with me is my co-host, Ernest Wobble. You're listening to our Founders Interview segment brought to you by Rivers of Unicorns, a virtual accelerator that supports innovative ideas and startups in underserved communities, setting them on a path to exponential growth. Our guest founder for today is Daniel Akipo, the CEO and co-founder of Throwaway.com. He graduated from the University of Port Harcourt with a bachelor's degree in microbiology and also has a certificate in flex plastic waste management from Lagos Business School. Welcome, Daniel. It's a pleasure having you here.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Please tell us about your business and how it works exactly.
Okay. Throwaway is a professional waste pickup service provider leveraging on technology to provide efficient, effective, and reliable waste collection system across Africa. The aim is to drive environmental sustainability. For me to say exactly what we do, I like to explain it in two steps, the why and the how. We believe that we owe the environment the responsibility to protect and preserve it. And that's why our goal is to deliver eco-friendly consciousness through an efficient and effective waste management practice. Over the years, humans have advanced exponentially, creating technology, products, services that allow for greater efficiency and convenience. Ironically, these gains are costing us the ecological balance that sustains our environment. And we believe that it's our responsibility to ensure that we maintain the balance of the ecosystem. Some few months ago, I watched a video that really portrayed what I'm just talking about now. It was a video of Afrosai. He's an Indian, and he did the largest cleanup in India, in one of the beaches in India. Now, the video showed, what was there before the cleanup and during the cleanup and after the cleanup. But what really touched me was the ending part of it. And they showed little turtles, breeding and then going back into the sea. And there was a comment on that 20 years to that time, turtles had not breeded on that soil. Why? Because waste had covered the whole place. The same thing is obtainable in any part of the world. As we throw, generate, and dispose waste improperly, we might not know to what extent we are destroying the ecosystem. So this is what our why. We want to see that the ecosystem is the balance of the ecosystem is maintained. And in our how, we looked at how can we do this and make it beautiful and get everyone to be part of it. And we decided to add value to waste. We decided to make people see that it's a responsible thing, to take care of your waste. And so we are bringing luxury, we are bringing value, and in the way we are very conscious in the way we do it. We do it deliberately. We don't just do it like every other person. Everything, every step of the way, we are very conscious and we bring in professionalism, we bring in everything that will make it beautiful. So that's Throwaway for you.
Thank you. Interesting. Okay, so you're trying to help our ecosystem, which is very important, and you're trying to give us that culture of not being messy, because it's actually a bad habit to be throwing stuff everywhere. But what just came to my mind, right, is, okay, when you take this waste, what happens to the waste? So we know that we have compost. People take food waste now and they're able to use it to create compost. Some people do biogas and all of that, or they recycle the plastics you get. So what exactly happens to the waste that you collect?
Okay, we have plans of converting every waste that we collect. And recently, we're already working on clean waste and getting people to understand what clean waste is about. But we've not started implementing this, okay? So this is more like futuristic plans. Things we'll start doing, say, from the next 6-9 months, we'll start from one step, and then we'll begin to expand them. But those are the original plans for us when we started, to see that waste does not end. In fact, we stand and we are pushing for zero tolerance on waste dumping on public vicinities or any landfill, you know, because that is actually what we, that's dangerous to the environment, you know. So currently we take them to government approved dump sites, but in the next few months, we are going to start rolling out our recycling plans. We are starting with plastic and papers, and then we go into other things. Actually, every waste that you generate can be converted into a raw material for something new.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that sounds really nice. Okay, so we understand your business. We understand why you were inspired to do it. But what we don't know right now is whether you have 10 heads or not. You know, like, people come up with things, like, you look at all them Zuckerbergs and it seems like they drop down from the sky. So why don't you tell us, like, where you come from, your educational background, like, what was it like growing up and all of that, so that we can have a sense of relation to you.
Oh, wow. Okay. I've mentioned my name, or my name has been mentioned already. I'm Daniel Akibo. Okay, and I studied microbiology at the University of Port Harcourt. I had particular interest in environmental microbiology, microbiology is very vast and has application in almost every area of life. But I particularly had interest in environmental microbiology and food microbiology also. But right now I'm doing the environment, so it's quite applicable too. Okay, I think that's it about me. Yeah.
Okay, so let me help you out. What secondary school did you go to?
Amy. Okay. Okay, I attended the Delta State Institute of Continuing Education.
Okay.
I'm from Delta State. Okay. So what else do you want me to say?
Okay, we want to know. We want to know that you are like us. How many siblings do you have? What is your favorite food? You like to eat eba? Or is it that bole and fish? That bole and fish that they do is really nice.
Now you are making me salivate. Like,
which one? Tell us.
Okay, I don't have a favorite food.
Yeah.
Okay, but I think I like food generally. But I have a favorite snack.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah, I love moi moi a lot.
Moi moi is food now. What do you mean?
I consider it snack.
That's not snack, it's food.
Okay. So I consider, okay, from now I will start considering it as food.
Uh-huh. Okay. Ernest,
how did you move over here, Daniel?
Okay, I came. That's to Port Harcourt, you mean?
Yes.
Okay. School brought me, so I attended the University of Port Harcourt, so definitely I had to be in Port Harcourt to study.
Stayed afterwards.
To what did you say?
You said you stayed afterwards, like after your school, you decided to stay back.
Yeah.
Okay. That's good.
Okay, back to the present. Daniel, how do you define success or measure success in your business?
Okay. Success is a process. So it's not a destination. So you won't say when I get to that point, then I'm successful. You just have to enjoy every step along the way, and it comes in tiny little bits, okay? So for us, the huge success would be when we begin to truly recycle and then take out a lot of trash from the environment. We hear it over and over that River State is the garden city of the nation. And currently, we won't say that. But when we begin to, by our effort, begin to see the state and other states where we, and other locations where we'll be found, we see trash, you know, become something that's valuable and out of this vicinity, then we would say we are achieving that huge success. But now, as we see smiles on people, when people call on us and tell us you are doing something great for us, we appreciate it. To us, that's a lot of success for us right now.
Okay. That sounds good. So speaking of the smiles, right, that you see on people's faces, that brings me to a burning question on the challenges you faced. And more specifically, like, it will be with your customer acquisition, because I would imagine that initially when you met people and said, hey, I want to collect your waste and you pay me for it, I'm sure people were not so open, right, to welcome your business. So what was it like?
Yeah, so the thing is, when we started, we had this big idea and we're like, you know, every normal person would like, okay, come take my trash, you know, and we expected a lot of people to sign up and all that, you know, bringing in technology with all the big ideas and all that. Mm-hmm. But really, you know, we realized that the market is quite different. So yeah. you meet the people and you tell them, okay, so we want you to sign up to this process so we can come take your trash and all that. Mm-hmm. They look at you, they're like, why should I do that when I can just throw it out there? You know?
Yeah.
That was a challenge. Then we also had a different kind of challenge where you are starting something that looks like it's new, and then you don't have anybody that's like a mentor to look up to, you know, to guide you through the process. So it's like you are doing this, and when you hit a brick wall, you just keep digging, keep pushing. It's either the wall breaks you or you break it, you know, that kind of thing. You know, so those are some of the challenges, and then maybe funding, then getting the right equipment and things like that, you know. But particularly for the that of the market, we realized that we have to start adjusting. Mm-hmm. Yes, we have to start adjusting. So now we are faced with a market that is like, they don't want what you're bringing. You think it's a big idea, but that big idea is in your head. You know, you know. So we have to start tweaking. We have to start iterating. We go back, and then we represent our pitch. But one story, I think it's relevant for this talk. It's when we entered a district where we had a large borrow pit, and everyone within that area. It's a very large area actually, and it was a developing area. You know, they were always going there, throw their waste into the borrow pit and all that. Then we took that, and then we began to go to their homes, and we began to tell them of the danger of that borrow pit. Now, each of these people in Nigeria, everybody, you get your water, so you have, everybody had boreholes in their homes. You know, there's no central water system, you know. So we all know how boreholes work. Borehole draws water from about a kilometer to itself. Now, when they throw things into the borehole pit, the leachates and everything sink down, and then they drag it back into their house because it's not dirty, in quote, they still take it in, but this water is contaminated. So as we began to preach this to them, you know, a lot of them began to understand what we're talking about. And before you knew it, our customer base in that place, you know, grew very fast. And from there, we started coming up with other strategies on how to go to other districts and all that. And really today, we've made huge success. And when it comes to breaking into a new area now, it's a lot easier for us to do that.
Mm. Hey, Daniel, talking about breaking into new areas, the world is experiencing a new era of lockdown. So I want to know, how has that affected your business? How has this COVID-19 pandemic and everything, how has it affected your business?
Okay, it has affected us positively and also negatively. Negatively in that when it started, we had a drop in our revenue because most of our corporate clients stopped, you know, especially during when the lockdown was really serious. So a lot of them that were not operating had to pause their subscription. But we also noticed that while the corporate clients reduced in their subscription, the homes, the individuals began to rise, you know. So because a lot of people were at home and they were generating waste, so they began to subscribe a lot to our services. And then noticed that they began to use, a lot of them began to use our platforms. Yeah, our technology is not yet launched. We've not deployed our technology. With our technology, it would be a lot easier for someone to go into our app or website and be able to log in and do whatever they want to do on that platform. But we've not deployed that. So, but we use the social media, our telephones and mobile phones and all that to reach out to our clients as a channel to reaching out to our clients. So we began, we noticed that there was marked increase, say for example, in our WhatsApp groups, each of our districts, you know, had have a group, the activity in such groups, you know, increased, you know. We also began to see a lot of people calling in to sign up. You know, so we were not just, we're no more going to them, but they were calling in because they want to sign up now. And then at that point also, we were already working on our payment system. Now we were stopping the collection of funds, you know, cash, you know. It was a bit difficult, but within this period, we began to see that it was improved. Like a lot of people now had that interest to transfer, make payments online, and those kind of things. So these are some of the ways it has helped us. So while we experienced a little drop in the corporate clients, we saw growth in other areas.
Speaking of the growth you saw, can you give us a statistical view of since you started? You started to a few years back, a statistical view of the growth over the years.
Okay, this is about 3 years since we've been in operation now. When we started with less than 50 clients. We started with less than 50 clients. And I would say over a period of 3 years now, I can say that we've grown by more than 60% of that on a monthly basis, you know. So accumulatively, we should be talking about over 3,000% of that. I think that should be the statistical situation of our growth. It's been steady, steady. That's the word.
That sounds impressive. So you've had 3,000%. Your growth rate is at 3,000%.
Yeah.
An annual basis or a monthly basis?
Okay. Accumulatively, on monthly basis, I would say 60%. Yeah.
Okay. That's still quite impressive. Sounds very attractive for potential investors. Are you open to getting investors?
Of course. We have our investment plans, so investors can subscribe to it. We do.
That sounds good. So people looking for lucrative investments, you should consider Treyway. All right. So now, right, you mentioned the fact that you're still working on your the tech platform, the app and everything. Now, while you're working on it, you know that you are venturing into a sector that is constantly evolving. I mean, as a data scientist, I can tell you that every time I have to keep on studying and learning something new because they're always bringing out new stuff. So how do you foresee your company evolving vis-a-vis the tech industry? that is constantly evolving?
Okay. In these 3 years of operations, one thing we have noticed is that what we are doing currently, it's a huge improvement from what our original business plan was. Okay, so even within the period we've operated, we've noticed that we have to keep changing things, we have to keep tweaking and keep improving. But just to wrap that or summarize that, I would say that in the next few years, I see Throwaway becoming a full-blown tech company that's providing solution for waste management.
Nice.
Daniel, we have to wrap this up now. So I'm going to give you a fun question. If you were a unicorn, which would you be and why?
Unicorn. Okay. I think I admire Brain and Joe of Airbnb. I admire Airbnb. That's because they started their business with an idea of solving a particular problem that normally one would consider like doesn't really make sense, kind of. You know, before they started, now it looks, you know, beautiful and all that. Before they started, it was kind of weird for you to say, I'm bringing someone, a stranger into my house, you know, and then we share space together or something like that, you know. But these guys saw it as a need. They wanted to help people pay less for accommodation and all that. And they started it. And today it's a unicorn, you know. A few days ago, I was following them and checking their current status and all that. But anyway, the point I'm making is that they came to solve a problem. And that's pretty much what we are doing at Throwaway. We've seen a problem that we believe that by solving it, we are going to change the way people live, the way people think. So I model them and I appreciate what they are doing. So if I'm going to be a unicorn and I'm following Airbnb.
That's great. Thank you, Daniel.
Thank you, Amy.
It was really lovely chatting with you today.
Thank you, Daniel, for joining us today. It's a pleasure.
It's a pleasure over here. Thank you so much, Amy and Ernest.
All right, folks, we've come to the end of today's episode, which was brought to you by NetOps in partnership with the Kaywood Brown Foundation, a youth empowerment and development foundation that's focused on preparing the leaders of tomorrow today. You can learn more on the foundation's work through their website, www.kaywoodbrownfoundation.org. Again, that's www.kaywoodbrownfoundation.org. And be sure to follow them on their various social media handles. For Facebook and Instagram, it's at Kaywood Brown Foundation. And for Twitter, it's KWB Foundation. Again, Facebook and Instagram, it's Kaywood Brown Foundation. And for Twitter, it's at KWB Foundation. We hope you've been inspired today to start looking at the problems around you as opportunities for new innovative business ideas. If you do and you need help, please log on to our website, www.riversofunicorns.com. That's www.riversofunicorns.com. And be sure to sign up for useful resources. Until the same time next Friday, we're your hosts, Amy and Ennis. Have a lovely weekend. Hello, beautiful people. I'm Amy Harry, and with me is my co-host, Ernest Wobo. You're listening to Rivers of Unicorns, the hub for tech enthusiasts. We are a virtual accelerator that supports innovative ideas and startups in underserved communities, setting them on a path to exponential growth. We are supported by the Kaywood Brown Foundation and powered by NetOps. In our lineup today, we'll have an interview with a special guest who is making great strides in changing how we think about waste management. So be sure to stay tuned for that. But first off, let's go over our news highlights. In the international scene, New York legislature votes to halt facial recognition tech in schools for the next 2 years. And after ad revenue drops, Twitter tells investors it's eyeing subscription options. In the local news, Nigerian banks want fintech collaborators, but for specific and unique needs. And lastly, Nigeria hits 2.5 million new internet subscriptions during the lockdown period. That's it for our news updates today. Up next is our discussion. You're listening to a discussion forum brought to you by Rivers of Unicorns, a virtual accelerator that supports innovative ideas and startups in underserved communities, setting them on a path to exponential growth. It is powered by NetOps in partnership with the Kaywood Brown Foundation. Our topic for today is COVID-19, Opportunities in the Chaos, Rethinking Education. To join the conversation, you can visit our website, www.riversofunicorns.com. Again, that's www.riversofunicorns.com. And through our Facebook page, Rivers of Unicorns. During this session, Ernest and I are being joined by Dr. Sotoyin Odubemi, who is a modern foreign languages teacher in a London secondary school and the founder of Daughters of Botany, a botanical tea company. We also have here Susan Charles, who is a teacher and a serial entrepreneur. She is the director of Birch Hill Consulting and the founding administrator of a prominent Facebook community called Teacher and Loving It. Welcome, ladies.
Now let's jump right in. We've seen everything, right, that has happened with the COVID pandemic and how we've all had to readjust our norms, regardless of what our norms are. I'm sure all of you will agree with me. So given the ripple effects, right, that we've had with COVID, we are all in the lockdown in our houses, having our office hours and everything. And I mean, when you think about education, education has gone from the classroom setting to in-house, where parents now have to do online learning with their kids. But we have lots of things that come into play. So the question is, do you guys think that with what has happened with COVID, our Nigerian educational system, pardon me, is going to experience a revamp, like turnaround in the whole situation? What do you think?
Okay, I'll start off. So I would say we've seen a few things in COVID. Three of them are really prominent. One, like you mentioned, is the parental involvement, right? Mm-hmm. The second would be the use of technology on a daily basis. And the third would be finding creative ways to reach our children, our students. So firstly, we know that when there's parental involvement, our children succeed, right? Because their parents are involved, they want to know what's going on, and so the children are encouraged to do better. Now, we want to see that continue even post-lockdown. We want to see parents not disengage, but actually continue to engage with the work that their children are doing. Post-COVID lockdown does not mean freedom from that responsibility, right? Yeah. But in terms of technology, and we'll get more into this, we've seen that now on a daily basis. We've made so many gains. I was talking to a parent this morning, and she said, look, we can't let go of those gains that we've made in terms of technology. But what is important is that it continues to be a part, an integral part of the learning, whether it's setting it through homework or actually in the classroom setting. And thirdly, that creativity that is so beautiful that we've seen our teachers step up and deliver. We want to continue to see the use of video in teaching, the use of application, etc. So those key things, parental involvement, technology, and of course, creativity. Let's not lose that.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, I mean, like, that makes a whole lot of sense, because, like, really, when you think about it, parents typically have this notion of, okay, you just send a child to school and then they're gone. Go meet the teacher. I don't want to deal with it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I really can see that. Yeah, that so that's one change, which it's not even necessary technology now. Even when your child is not using the tech, the parents still need to be involved in the mm-hmm. education of the child. Mm. Suzanne, is there something you want to add?
I think that the entire pandemic has been a blessing in disguise for the education industry in Nigeria. And the reason I say that is because a lot of us teachers have been in our comfort zones, teaching in the classroom, mm-hmm. and just working with the tools that you're used to in the classroom. And then suddenly, you have the lockdown and you find teachers scrambling to learn new tech tools and, you know, ways to make learning more engaging for the children. And I've seen teachers spend 4 hours laboring over making a 10-minute video. And initially it was exciting, and then depression set in, and some of them said, you know what, Ms. Suzanne, in fact, let me just tell you, I'm not doing it again. I'm like, you can't not do it again, you know. This is our new normal, so we have to step up. So we saw teachers evolve from being traditional old school teachers to being tech savvy, and it's been amazing, especially on my Facebook group. I've seen teachers who were very traditional, suddenly they are even running free trainings for other teachers, teaching them how to use these tech tools. So I believe that education will never go back to what it once was. Mm-hmm. Because these tools, the children are actually enjoying themselves more. So, like we had earlier said, I know that, you know, teachers would have no choice but to embrace technology even more to enhance the learning experience of the children.
Yeah, thank you. I can see that. How, for someone who you've not been creating videos, you know, we are in the era of social media influencers. Exactly. And they just keep creating their videos, putting them on YouTube and everything. But teachers most times don't think about such things. Very few of them, like, try to participate with the online community. So then having the teachers be the ones creating the videos,
exactly.
I can imagine. Like, but, you know, let's think about that actually. Do the teachers really need to be the ones, like, spending all the time to, like, try to figure out how they should put these videos together? Shouldn't that be, like, a good support system that helps them in curating the videos?
Yeah, that's the beautiful thing about joining online communities on social media, especially for teachers. A lot of people could create a video and then they share a link. So you don't necessarily have to create a video every time you need to teach. Sometimes you can get the videos ready-made and they're already suited. Sometimes some teachers even get 2 different videos and they merge it using an app, you know, to get their point across. And then sometimes they just want that personal touch, and then they would want it to be taught the way they would teach it if they were in the classroom. And so at that time, they create their videos. So it's a pretty exciting one. You can either create your own videos or use what you find. In fact, it was during this pandemic I found out there was something like TeacherTube. I'd never heard of TeacherTube before. And of course, you should understand that TeacherTube is the YouTube for teachers. Everything you need, teacher resources, they are free of charge, videos, links, and all of that. You can get them from there. So it's pretty exciting if you want to, you know, piggyback off what someone else has done. Of course, you have to give credit, but they don't have to create everything. But sometimes your children need to have a personal connection. They need to know that what they are being taught is uniquely yours. So at that time, your teachers can now supplement with their own videos.
Okay, yeah, that sounds good. All right, so let's move on from that, right? Now we have another situation at hand. There are lots of people, like I've been hearing this, that online learning cannot succeed in Nigeria. And personally, I think that's like a backwards way to think about things because people should always be interested in moving forward. But at the same time, like I can also understand where these folks are coming from because in Nigeria, we have infrastructure issues like electricity and all. So what do you guys think we in general as a society need to achieve in order to overcome this hurdle of getting to that phase where online learning is the norm for everybody, not just for the middle class family, but also for the poor people that live in slums and everywhere to be equal access? Like, what do you guys think? And for we, the private sector, because like each one of us, I believe we are not government employees. So this is not a situation where you're saying, oh, what does the government have to do? We as private individuals with our different companies we have and everything, how can we also help?
So one of the things that we've seen highlighted is the digital divide, right? So like you mentioned, there are people even within urban areas who do not have access to high-speed internet for their learning and or may have shared usage of a device, which is a mobile device, which you can't really type on. So there are all kinds of issues with that, and access to data, for example, as well. And I want to also mention that whilst we think about those that are marginalized by the digital divide, we must also think about those who are not actually participating in education. So we know from the data that Nigeria has the highest number of children who are not in school. A lot of these are in the north. Now, that is problematic when we're talking about the education system, right, and reaching everybody within it. How about the non-subscribers to our current education system? So on the one level, we do know that radio has been used, like we've just heard, right, to kind of facilitate those situations where there is no access to internet. I think we can talk about the infrastructure being put in, but that's probably a longer term investment. I think we need to then find workaround ways. So one of those, like I said, would be radio that we've seen used in states in Nigeria, but also in some war-torn areas, right? We've seen that used in South Sudan. We've seen that used in other countries. So that's important to not forget the radio. We can create hubs of learning. So I'm not sure what it's going to be like when schools return, but whether there's going to be hybrid systems, I'm not sure of the kind of details of that, right? But we can, as private kind of the corporate sector, we can create hubs, fund data for children to learn in spaces with the appropriate health, kind of like, you know, the mask or the distancing, right? But we can create those hubs. So we pay for the data there and we know that children have access to that learning. In terms of how we reach those children who are not subscribing to school and the school system, I think that's a much larger project. And whilst I'm just throwing different problems into the pots, let me also mention the special education needs children. That's really important. Now, I'm not a special education specialist, but I think that that's something to really consider because beyond that technological kind of environment that we're creating, there needs to be that personal touch and that support.
Yeah. Suzanne, do you have any thoughts on this?
Oh, yes. The truth is the regular brick and mortar school cannot be taken out of the picture completely. Mm-hmm. But I've seen a lot of back and forth with online learning at this time. A couple of schools were excited to start their online learning. And after 1 month, the parents said, you know what, I'm done. You know, I don't have the data for this. I don't have the phone for this. I don't even have the time for this. And so I don't think that there's a one-size-fits-all for the educational space in Nigeria. I just feel like every school needs to look at what works for them and do that. For some people, the parents are on board. They have enough devices to go around. So at that time, they can do the synchronous learning. But for those who have to share and those who may not be available at the time of the lessons, I think that the asynchronous learning will work better for them. Where we have, and we have lots of learning management systems like that now that are free, that schools can leverage on, where they can just put their content, their videos, their assignments, upload it, and then give a time frame. I remember when I was doing my master's with the University of Liverpool, that's what worked for us. And I thought it was really good. They would just put up the content and say, you know what, between Thursday to Saturday, you need to work on this. And then when you do that, they'll tell you, you have an assignment or you have to, you know, respond to someone's discussion question, and you have to post 3 times between Saturday to Tuesday. You have to turn in your homework before Wednesday. So we were able to do other things and still, you know, plan ourselves, plan our time, and deliver our lessons and our workload as at when due. So I think that that's also a very good way that people can leverage on these things. I love the idea of creating hubs. I actually said to my husband this afternoon that one of the things I look forward to doing is creating teacher resource hubs across Nigeria. We can have those hubs where people can come in, just utilize the data, and we could have blocks, learning blocks, you know, so people can pick the time that will work for them. You could come for the morning session twice a week, another set could come for the afternoon session twice a week or something. Something has got to do. But the truth is, education can never be the same again. And so we must find a way to bridge the gap between the rich and the poor and the out of school.
Yeah.
You know, just to add to what Susan has said, because I didn't want to mention this, but since Susan is going to kind of burst it wide open, let's do it. We need to change the way we sequence education. What she said, right? Flip learning. So some in the classroom, we bring them in and we say, this is what we're learning today. I think that one of the things that this will do is make us set homework that is actually a pre-learning of what we will discuss in class, so that when we come to class, I, as a teacher, I'm not the only expert on the topic. I'm standing in front of 30 experts on the topic, and we're going to have a deeper conversation. Why is that important? Because it will increase memory and it will increase application. It will totally change the way our children think, and it could be a huge paradigm shift for us. When they go and do homework after that, it's a deepening homework and a pre-learning for the next lesson. Do you see how that would change our children's lives?
Yeah, I can see that. I can see that helping, because, I mean, children don't like to study, at least most children. And if we're honest with ourselves, when we're kids, we didn't like to study either. I didn't like to study. So, like, having that system where you're encouraging the kid to study and then come to class, you will ensure that you don't even have distracted kids in your class. Everybody, you're carried along with what is going on. So yeah, I can see that working out. But you mentioned something which was about the highest number of Nigeria has the highest number of kids that are out of school. And when you said that, I'm like, yeah, like that was my realization in 2014, and it was like they hit me on the head. I'm like, what? Because we look at our society and a lot of people are educated for what you can see, but you're only dealing with your immediate surroundings. It's just like what you're saying about special needs. A lot of people, like when you look at all the technology solutions that are coming out, recently I was checking to see the different edtech things we have in Nigeria, and I didn't see anything that was created for special needs. So there is this, I think, like we really need to rewire the way we think even about creating solutions. It shouldn't be one or the other. We should, when you're thinking about a solution, it should be holistic. And then you think about big corporations, as we were discussing, what came to my mind, like with the data thing you mentioned, Suzanne. Like, you have people like MTN and all them Globalcom and all that. Why can't they have it in their corporate social responsibility that for such communities, you give them free data for them to get educated specifically for education, so you can have the specific applications that are approved for that data. So if anyone maybe tries to use YouTube or something else that is not, then it's blocked. So I think like there are so many things that can be done when you think about it. Like you have, I remember that there was this, I think it was in Kenya also, where they had this solar, portable solar panel chargers that they use in charging phones. So even when you talk about, oh, we don't have electricity, there are things that people can do to encourage this environment, also in the sense of what you said of having hubs, where so these hubs can be powered by solar energy, because I mean people need to see, like if you're studying in the dark, it's not gonna work.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting, like, and this just it's a nice segue into like thinking about it 5 to 10 years from now, what it's going to look like. And it's something we have to start thinking about now. Because if before COVID, we had the highest number of children that were out of school, and now with COVID, that number definitely has increased. So it's everybody, listeners at home, like you all have to sit down and start thinking about what you can do. Like there's no, Google was started in a garage. The Google that we all love today, it was started in a garage. So there's so much, like with everything we're seeing around, all the problems we're highlighting and the different good that has come out of COVID, with parents getting involved. Even parents, you parents, you can be the next genius that comes up with a tech solution to the educational problem because you're trying to help yourself. Yeah, but then it becomes a help for the whole world. Starting with Nigeria. So it's a nice thing to think about. It might keep you up at night, but it's good to think about. My dear beloved co-host, Ernest, I haven't heard you. I am waiting for you to tell me what you think. At least tell me something that you think about Nigeria 5 to 10 years from now. Come on.
I just enjoyed the discussion. Discussion was interesting when I was enjoying it. what I think about my educational system 5 or 10 years from now.
Yeah. What do you see happening?
What I've heard here, if we can have all these things going, I think we are headed in the right path. I think we can make progress, and I think we can bring more students and more children into the educational field.
Okay. Thank you. All right, quickly, because we are running out of time. So I have a fun question for you ladies. If you could be any unicorn, any, Zuckerberg, whichever, Teal, which one would you be? And okay, why? So, tell us why.
I think I'd be Louis von Ahn. So he's the founder of Duolingo, which is a language app, language learning app. And he created that based on his experience growing up in Guatemala and knowing that language, learning another language, can really change your life. Obviously, as a linguist, I know this. And so I recommend my students use it every day. So it's something that I use in my teaching, but I've also used as a human, not just a teacher.
Yeah. I love that. I have that app on my phone and my computer. I'm using it to learn how to speak Spanish.
Muy bien, muy bien.
Yes. Okay, Suzanne, what about you?
If I could be any unicorn, I'd be VIP Kid. Okay. That was founded by Cindy Lee, Jesse Chen, and Victor Zhang. I got that name right. This was founded in 2013, and VIP Kid caught my attention because basically what they're doing is they're matching people who want to learn English to teachers, and they're paying. So the teachers are being paid and paid well for teaching children across China how to speak proper English. And now they also created another one where children are learning Mandarin. So they're also matching Mandarin teachers to people who want to learn, to children who want to learn Mandarin. So I think it's a pretty exciting one because it opens up the frontiers of educational technology. And I mean, teachers across the world could have students somewhere else, and they're getting paid very well for doing a good job. For doing what they would normally do in a classroom.
Yeah, I should check that one out. Mandarin is another language on my list. There we go. All right. So unfortunately, this is all the time we have. for today. It was really lovely chatting with you ladies. Ernest, it's all yours. Tell us the wonderful book you have picked for us and why.
Okay. Hi, those ladies. The book we have for the week is 0 to 1, Notes and Startups and or How to Build the Future by Peter Thiel, the co-founder of PayPal. Any of you ladies read the book?
Sadly, no.
Not yet, but we will soon.
Well, it's an interesting one. I strongly recommend it for you to read it. Even our listeners, Peter Thiel explains how any determined, determined individual can create a new invention similar to how we created paper. So it's important to be able to get your great ideas into reality, and this book explores that. So it's a great read for
So that's a must read for me.
Yeah. It's strongly recommended. Okay. Thank you, Susan, and thank you, Sutene, for joining us today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you.